is someone for everyone.
Well, there's someone for one out of 20 people. Welcome to Super True Stories. We suffer through and report back on the worst and weirdest documentaries you can stream. I'm Dave Hunt.
And I'm Jamie Hunt, and this is Payback.
Oh, is that what this is?
Yes. For all the plant ESP and the yogurt that can feel emotions.
So I make you watch one bad thing after you made me watch like eight bad things.
Yes, but this started out as your podcast, and somehow I'm forced to watch these terrible things week after week.
Forced is a little strong when you're the one picking the things out most of the time. Like this, the parking lot movie from 2010.
This is both worst and weirdest.
I don't know what this is.
It could have been an interesting film. It wasn't.
One of the big problems that I'm going to mention up front, just because it's something we have to immediately contend with and continue to contend with, is that this is like a cast of thousands.
Yeah, it's like every white 38-year-old man in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Working at this car lot and hating on UVA.
Right. But I think it might literally be every 38-year-old white man that lives in Charlottesville. So the documentary is following the antics, I guess, of at least 20 people who are parking lot attendants or former parking lot attendants for the corner parking lot in Charlottesville. And it is apparently adjacent to the bar scene for UVA.
One of the things that they'll complain about as we get going is all of the drunk rich kids, while, you know, these guys are struggling for minimum wage and leading a very different lifestyle. And there is a lot of resentment.
A lot.
If you want to go with a literal name, this could have been called Resentment the Movie.
Yes. Yes.
The guy who runs this parking lot named Chris hires these guys, and then it sounds like the way they get the jobs are through friendships.
They have a whole segment where they're all talking about, like, I got the job because of Craig.
I got the job because of Brian Thackeray.
Tony Z,
he got the job because of me.
I got the job from Ben, who got my friend Greer the job.
I got the job through Nate.
I got the job because I knew Maynard.
And it goes on and on and on like that.
It does. And as much as they would probably critique sorority people or fraternity people as all being the same, I got bad news for these guys.
Right.
We open with a crane shot down into the parking lot, which falsely gives you expectations that there's a budget, a purpose, and someone who knows what they're doing. But that's not true.
No.
And there's not a narrative thread exactly. It's just these guys bitching and moaning about parking cars.
It's a little bit like the grumpy old men at Christmas, except it's like grumpy 30-something men with philosophy degrees.
Yes. One of the Johns talks about how the parking attendants are the champions and the victors because you have a car and you're going to need to park the car, so you're stuck going to them.
And this theme continues throughout this. This whole idea that they sort of control the world because they control, like, what seems to be like maybe 40 parking spots.
Yeah. One of the people who I think is most notable is Harper. And he talks about how on the rung of employment, being a parking attendant is beneath taxidermy. And it's beneath being a bellhop because bellhops at least get uniforms.
Well, and like, taxidermying has become sort of a hipster cool thing since the time that this documentary came out. So it's probably now several rungs below that.
Well, I could see these guys doing taxidermy in their little shack while they're killing time.
Absolutely.
One of them describes the booth that they work out of as the kind of building Jesus would have collected parking fees from.
Yes.
I think it's Harper a little later on who derides parking lot attendants who are doing that at like ramps where they get to work indoors in booths with heating and air conditioning.
Like, there's different classes of parking lot attendant.
They're in their air conditioned, heater things. They don't leave the booth. They're not moving amongst the people. They're not doing anything. You know, they think they're parking lot attendants, but they have no clue.
What?
And one of them says something about that the parking lot is the toll booth attendant for the American dream. And I thought to myself, isn't the parking lot attendant the parking lot attendant for the American dream? Wouldn't the toll booth attendant be the toll booth attendant on the highway to the American dream?
There are lots of strained metaphors in here because a lot of these guys fancy themselves as philosophers.
Yes. There are a lot of anthropology majors, philosophy majors, and I think that the parking lot owner says something about how the anthropology majors actually get into it because they're studying people that come through the parking lot.
Yeah, he says something about it like being like field work for them.
Yeah.
We could talk for a second about Chris since he's come up a couple times.
He's like super into owning this parking lot.
Yeah. And the guys seem to love and respect him.
Now, Chris definitely, you know, is a key figure in this world. the mastermind, the man behind the curtain.
And this amused me. Chris says that when he was younger, he did a bunch of traveling, and he admired guys in little stores.
Yeah, and he describes a store where, like, the guy didn't even have a door for his shop. He'd, like, jump in and out of the window when customers came.
This inspired him to want to own a parking lot?
I guess. And it is the tiniest little booth. It's big enough for a lawn chair.
Chris talks about how, for him, it's all about how he treats his employees as long as the cars aren't getting damaged. And I think that's kind of another thing to have in the back of your mind because they hate their customers.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, really violently hate their customers. And then sometimes literally violently hate their customers.
Yes. It becomes pretty obvious that this is just a bunch of guys who are doing a job that they have way more mental bandwidth than the job requires. And they have a bunch of freedom to just goof off at work.
Yep. But they also acknowledge that they are pretty much unemployable in any other manner.
Mm-hmm. John mentions that people have a lot of time to consider the existential implications of their job and their life. But Matt counters that it seems like a slack job, but it's a great way to understand the Buddhist idea of detachment.
Yes. I get the sense that this is a lot that's primarily used in the evenings.
They talk about how, like, at 2 or 3 in the morning, when you're the only one there and you've got a big wad of cash and nobody's around, that's not a good time to be in this parking lot, I guess.
They're a cash or check only enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem like somebody could totally steal a whole lot of money.
When you're dealing with a whole bunch of drunk college age kids walking back from a bar.
Well, and there actually was a serial killer prowling the streets in Charlottesville a couple of years later than this. There's at least one Charlottesville serial killer that could have done some harm to them.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about all of that.
Yeah. I think that there was a parking lot attendant who, like, testified seeing the girl get into the guy's car. And I looked to see if it was this parking lot, but I couldn't find anything about it.
That would demand a sequel.
See, that's what I mean when I think that there's, like, a rich potential for this. Like, as an anthropological field study, you see a slice of life in the parking lot, but instead we're like watching these guys flip cones.
Yes, which is basically you grab those orange cones that you see on the road and you're trying to flip one in the air so that it lands on top of another one that's on the ground. And he talks about wanting to make a movie of parking lot attendants playing flip cone.
Yeah.
Which probably wouldn't be more tedious than this.
They talk about how being a parking lot attendant means long periods of tedium. And my notes say exactly like this movie.
Yeah, they say it's long periods of tedium punctuated by brief moments of fuck you, buddy.
Yeah. I think Harper's really the first person that reveals how much he hates people. because he talks about when he's parking cars, he passive-aggressively sets the parking brake.
He also says that no one's parents ever look down at their baby's crib and say they hope the baby grows up to work at a parking lot.
That's probably fair.
Uh-huh. One of the ways that they pass time is they have these, like, chunks of cardboard that they put on the walls inside the booth, and then they cut a bunch of things out of newspapers and, you know, comics and clips and stuff like that. So basically they're building like a mid-1990s zine, but they're doing it on the wall of this booth.
Totally. It's actually fairly cool.
Yeah.
But they also have, sort of as an extension of the cardboard expressions, they paint different sayings on various gates. So, you know, like the arms that go up and down, they spray paint different sayings on them, and then they can pick which saying they feel like having that day.
Yes. One of them, his thing is to paint names of has-been actors and actresses.
Yes.
So I guess RIP Molly Shannon's career.
Right.
That was the name we got to see him spray paint that day.
Yes. But they also talk about how people break the gates multiple times a night. Like a good night, only one gate is broken. But there can be three gates broken in a night.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hear the gate being broken and they're running over there to try to catch the person in the act. And then they charge the person $20 for breaking the gate.
Yeah, it was funny because the guy is actually seemingly in the middle of interviewing for this documentary and somebody sneaks up and cracks the crossbar off.
But then they kind of go on a rant about the increasing size of cars.
They talk about just like flat out refusing to let Hummers park there.
Which I don't disagree with.
One of the things that we could talk about that is a little bit thematic is their altercations with people.
Yes. And there's a lot.
There was a girl who came through who owed 40 cents.
Yes.
And argued about it.
And finally, she snapped at me and she's like, you know, I know who you are. It's like, I hope you're proud of yourself. You know, now you're great. You're a parking lot attendant. I was like, yeah, I am proud. I love this job. Like, I hope you're proud of yourself driving your father's car and trying to beat out a 40 cent parking fee.
They both have strong cases.
Yes.
At one point, one of them gets into a fight with a lady over $3.
Yeah. I kind of get their point on some of this. Like, these people pull up and they're driving nice cars and you are fighting with somebody over whether or not you have to pay $6 or $9. Just get out of there and never park there again if it pisses you off that much.
Right. I wondered, like, this feels chicken or eggy. Are they totally hating people because people are jerks to them, or are people jerks to them because they hate people?
Yeah, I don't know. I think part of it is like they all have at least an air of pretentiousness.
Yes. They assume that people think less of them or something, and so then they think less of those people. It's very interesting, but it is, with one exception, all white men, and it's very much a white space.
Have you been to Charlottesville?
There's one part that I thought was hilarious, but they're showing all these drunk people, like, sort of stumbling down the street. And they said, Dan says, it's like watching the migration of jellyfish.
One of them, and it might have been him, says that
all of the people who graduate, for the most part, are going to make more money in a year than I will in my entire life. Not only that, many of them are going to be sending my children to wars on other planets. And not only that, but they all just vomited on a Buick.
I love that. So we used to live down the road from UVA. And the thing that I always heard about UVA is that the people wear pastel and it's like super preppy. Nobody wears jeans. Everybody wears like khakis and then pastel shirts. And based on the footage from this documentary, that is entirely accurate.
The people that they're showing at UVA, like, this documentary was made in 2010. This is some serious I Heart the 90s going on with these prep looks.
Yes.
One of the things that I was amused by was the beeping penalty.
Yes, I loved that.
If you honk while the person ahead of you is paying, when it's your turn, they charge you double.
I loved that. And I think it's fair.
Yeah, I mean, wait your turn and calm down.
Then we get a clip of Two of the parking lot attendants are standing around, and one of them, I think it's Harper, says to the other one, "That woman called you an idiot." And the guy is just like, "What?" And then just runs after the vehicle.
The car was already completely gone.
Yes.
You can't even see where this car is.
No.
But he goes charging after it. Harper also threw a wrench at a vehicle when the person didn't pay, and he says that it broke the mirror. And one of them talks about hanging onto a Jeep as it pulled onto the main street, and he's like, realizes that he's about to break every bone in his body for $2.
Yeah. And we actually get to see one of them chase after a vehicle, and he's like kicking it and hitting it and like flinging himself at it and swearing at the person. And then John talks about like slamming some guy's head into the steering wheel of a car.
This place sounds nuts.
There's a lot of pent-up rage here. And there's a lot of things they have rage about. They have rage because law students can't park. They say that people who drive Priuses always have license plate that refers to the fact that they're driving Priuses.
This amused me.
The amount of Prius-centered vanity plates is unreal. And every time they give you their keys, it's like, "Hello, I'm driving the Prius license plate. My Prius." It's the Prius over there. Do you know how to drive a Prius? And it's just like, "Yeah, I get it. I know how to drive the damn Prius."
That must have been like right when Priuses came out.
It must have. One of them says they write down the license plates when cars drive off without paying, because one day God will shine his light of justice down and hand us the sword to fucking tow them when they're dumb enough to park in here again.
Right. Like their whole lives must just be like poised on the precipice of being able to call a tow truck.
Right. Like that's a good day.
Yeah. They like call all of them to come into work to watch the tow truck come and do it.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the guys goes on this rant where he says,
"I hate everybody that parks there equally. I think everybody is a dick or an asshole. I think that people that park crooked fucking suck. I think that people that like don't want to pull all the way into the parking spot suck. The people that suck the worst are the people that pull up to the gate and don't realize you have to press the button on the fucking machine to get a ticket. Those people fucking suck."
I wonder how they would feel about Shauna and Josh from Otherworldly Amour, who took 20 minutes to figure out how to get out of a parking garage.
Yeah, we need to connect all these people together.
Right. The sole female that we see in this movie is John L.'s wife, Joanna, who it sounds like he fell for because she was a good parker and drove a small car.
I wrote that down too.
There is someone for everyone.
Well, there's someone for one out of 20 people based on this documentary, because I think the rest of these guys are alone.
I think that's fair.
I think John L. is the guy who got out.
But it's like, what attracted you to your wife? Well, she's a good parker and she has a small car.
But if she'd showed up in a Prius, there would have been no chance.
No.
Harper says that you don't want to make a career out of working at this place, but some people come close to it. I worked at the parking lot for 11 years.
Yeah. I hope he was working on a PhD.
If you've got like a big thing that you're doing with your life and then this is the like paying some bills portion.
And you'd be able to easily work on schoolwork while you're sitting in the parking lot.
Well, and given the number of people who appear to be at this parking lot, I don't know how you could have this many people working there and have any of them working full-time hours.
A lot of them are former attendants, though.
Yeah, that's true. I guess it's hard to know how many of these people are actually actively working there.
You probably could go watch it again and take notes about that. So I'll wait here and you can go do a second viewing.
No.
Do we need to do like a snap transition? Like you've watched it and now you're back and you're here to tell us?
It turns out that it wasn't 20 people, it was 30.
And they're all named John.
Yeah.
I wonder how much Chris makes on this parking lot.
That's a good question. We never really get any sort of sense of how he is doing financially.
Yeah. Except that he doesn't seem to be stressed.
No. In fact, one of the last things that he says is that it's important to remember that it's just a parking lot and there's much more going on in this world, kind of live and let live.
And he could easily have another full-time job. This could just be like a side stream of income because it doesn't appear he really works there.
Right.
Are we ready to talk about what everybody's doing now?
We check in with 15 of these guys to see where they are after the filming of this was done.
It was like 7 full minutes of, this person's doing this now.
It was the longest single portion of the documentary.
Yeah. I was like looking at the countdown of the time and thinking, this is the whole movie.
Mm-hmm. Many of them are going to school in some way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler is currently editing philosophy journals.
Yes, which seems fitting.
He found the one thing that pays less than working at the parking lot.
Yes.
But James becomes the bass player for Yola Tango.
But I was like, wait a second. I have some of their songs.
That's a band I've heard of.
I was kind of impressed.
I went and watched one of their music videos, and there he is in it.
Yep, that's him. And Harper is now a barista.
But he says he also still works as a parking lot attendant.
Yeah. And then John is a librarian for the Met in New York City.
Well, one of the Johns.
The John that has a wife and who kind of makes my eye twitch a little bit.
Mm. Chris is still running the corner parking lot, which he's done since 1986. And you might think that this should be the end. But it ends with them rapping about the parking lot.
And it's painful.
If there was one part of this that you wanted to watch to get a sense of how demoralizing this whole production is, that's where I would go.
Just skip to the end.
Skip to like the last 2 minutes and just imagine the movie that perfectly accompanies this rap.
You break my gate, you're gonna have to choose. You could go to jail or pay me, either way you lose. Don't ever try to drive it or attack the booth. I got a tire and I can hear to make you pay your dues. God will hand us the sword of justice. God will hand us the sword of justice.
Oh, this is not a good movie.
It's not a good movie, but did you learn anything?
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't fucking know either.
I did learn some things. I learned that if you think that the parking lot attendant is scowling at you and judging your car, you are right. I also learned, oh, Dave, this documentary premiered at South by Southwest, was purchased by PBS, and was reviewed in the New York Times.
What did the New York Times think of this?
Well, first let's talk about the dad joke that is the start of this review, which is that it is called Imperfect Attendance. My favorite line is that the mix of absurdism and intellectualism is perfect.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump right into what did I learn, because I also noticed that at the film festival portion of the South by Southwest 2010 event, this was hailed as the most feel-good film.
This is a depressing screed on humanity. It's like class warfare and total misandry and like,
I learned that I don't need to go to South by Southwest.
Right?
The fact that anybody coming out of that festival thought this is the thing to watch.
Not even just looking at the contents of the documentary. There's no context really given around it. I'm a big believer in documentaries should provide some sort of context. But beyond that, it's not well shot. It's, I wouldn't say particularly well edited. It's just not a good movie. And it's so dull.
I think a big part of why it's so dull is like you could collapse many of these people into like, just pick one person who's like that.
Yes.
All of these people, they're just saying the same things.
Yes. They're interchangeable.
Yeah.
Like I said at the beginning, it's like a whole cast of 38-year-old white guys.
Yeah. And one will do.
And I think that it would have been more interesting to, like you said, narrow the focus, but then maybe dig a little bit deeper into some of the themes.
Yes. This did reaffirm to me like the importance of treating people decently, because they do have a brief chunk in here where somebody is like making fun of them for even bothering to collect such little money. And then it seems like somebody driving an expensive vehicle and in a different socioeconomic class is treating somebody who's not in that same class, like they're dirt. Like, in their defense, people can be shitty.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's sort of that chicken and egg thing from earlier. And I also think that there's a lot of people who are not necessarily in that income tax bracket. You know, it's their parents that are in that income tax bracket.
That's how they afford their rock and roll lifestyle.
Exactly. You picked up what I was putting down. I think some of their rage is that the people who are behaving as though they're a better class of people are actually just the children of people who've achieved things and have not yet in their lives achieved anything.
Right. They happen to have won the lottery as a child where they're in a family with means.
Exactly. These kids were born with connections and networks, and it is very hard for somebody to break into those ranks if they don't come from that.
Right.
They could probably pick and choose from just about any job because they're all very intelligent and well-educated, but they alluded to the fact that they're kind of unemployable. And that means like you're going to be working in an environment like this.
Yeah. You probably don't really want to be the parking lot attendant guys.
No, they do not seem to enjoy life that much.
Harper is one of the ones who's the first to admit, like we talked about earlier, that like this isn't really what you aspire to.
We say that, but none of them really talk about hardship that comes with working a service job in terms of health insurance, or we don't really hear about how they're scrimping to get by.
Well, that would be much too coherent an actual point to try to make.
Right.
Like, there's no real point here.
Go watch the trailer. That's all you need to watch. I think that if you're going to watch a movie that we've screened, the Grizzly Bear movie or The Natural History of the Chicken, those were actually entertaining movies. This is, like, kind of depressing.
It's not remotely a recommend.
No. But if you'd like to recommend something...
You're welcome.
Yes. Nice segue there. If you'd like to recommend something, we would really love it if you recommended our podcast to your family and friends, or if you would give us a review wherever you download your podcast. You can also interact with us on Twitter at Super2Story or on Facebook at Super2Stories.
And we also need to give shout outs to Tomb Dragomir for our theme song, which is Mexicana Massacre off of his album Instrumental Psycho Synth. And if you're looking for more podcasts, we recommend our friends at 6 Foot Plus and the Projection Booth. And it's a little late in the episode to say this, but note the explicit tag on our podcast. You may not want to play this for your 5-year-old on the way to school.
Yes, we've gotten some feedback.
That's not totally random thoughts I just had there. That is in response to something. So
yes,
we have a new fan who is listening to all of our episodes, all the backlog, and discovering that it's hard to drive and quickly put earmuffs on your children.
Right. And, you know, I honestly didn't think we were that colorful, but it would appear that we are. We do not intend to scar any of your young ones.
No. You should be trying as a parent to prevent your children from being exposed to any of the things that we're watching for this podcast.
Right.
All right. Well, I think I've had enough warmed over philosophy from the parking attendant guys. So until next time, I'm Dave Hunt.
And I'm Jamie Hunt.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
She was a jerk, and her father was a jerk. He was my 6th grade math teacher. He was a total jerk. Fuck that guy.